witnessed mismanagement and nastiness that have weakened the station. We need to implement a diversified fundraising plan using detailed proposals by Justice and Unity and others. We need more programming that conveys the activism of youth and our diverse communities. Please vote for the entire Justice and Unity slate. Visit justiceunity.org.
Stop members of the Pacifica National Board from selling WBAI. Pacifica and WBAI have lost more than $2 million because of the same board member's appointment of a CFO who failed to submit an audit. My name is Alex Steinberg. Years ago, I was a highly effective member of the Pacifica National Board. I know where the bodies are buried. I am running again so we could save WBAI and the Pacifica Network. Only the Indy Elect Caucus 2015 candidates are pledged to change the National Board and management and save WBAI. If you want accountability, financial stability, progressive programming, and an end to cronyism, vote for me, Alex Steinberg. For more information, go to electindycaucus2015.org.
Hello, WBAI. My name is Bob Young, and I am an independent caucus member running for re-election as a listener candidate on the local station board. For the past 3 years, I have served the listeners faithfully as chair and as vice chair with an almost perfect attendance record. The LSB is only empowered to certain tasks by the bylaws. I pledge to support them and not make false promises about what can and cannot be done. I support transparency and accountability in Pacifica and in WBAI. Please vote for me, Bob Young, and the whole Elect Indy Caucus 2015 team. Visit us at www.electindycaucus2015.org and at our Facebook page by the same name. Thank you.
The views expressed are not those of WBAI management, staff, or current board. To view full candidate statements, visit www.elections.pacifica.org. Hello, this is Gene Johnson, your local election supervisor, informing you that on-air local board candidate forums will take place on Monday, November 16th from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. and Wednesday, November 18th from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Please call in during those times to ask questions of your local board candidates, or you may submit questions in advance via email at wbai-les@pacifica.org, or you may leave a voice message at 347-927-0701. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Paulette.
Good morning, Kathy.
So nice to be here, live and in person.
And
I feel absolutely liberated. Even if it's short-lived.
It's still nice.
It's still nice to be here, be able to have a nice conversation. I was hoping that our phones would be up, but I know that they're very close. They're in the works. I see people working on in the technology closets and plugging things and unplugging things. So I think we'll have phones and be able to accept listener calls very soon. I'm totally looking forward to that. It's been a while.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So here we are, and today is supposed to be a very auspicious day. 11/11 is the day. Yeah, well, not anymore. Yesterday. Now it's 11/12. But, yeah, it's supposed to be a very auspicious day in terms of the calendar and, you know, if you follow astrology and all that kind of thing, transition points and getting close to the truth of our being. All that stuff is predicted for 11/11. I don't know if it's true in the sense that if you're not ready, probably nothing will happen, and even if it does, who notices these things? So I don't know, but I'm hoping that the world will begin to transform itself and people will be more connected to the fullness, the wholeness of they are, of who they are, instead of to the and frustrate us in the exterior world.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I actually have become very, in some ways, isolated because I don't actually watch television. Mm-hmm. And unless I open up the computer and look for news, I really don't know what's going on. So maybe you could tell me what's happening in the world today.
You don't want to know? Some frightening things happening.
All right, let me know. I don't know. I don't have a clue.
Very frightening things happening. Well, there is the prospect of this Trans-Pacific trade agreement.
Oh yeah, well that I knew about. That's you're right. That's a horror.
That are underway, and it will be a question of how individual governments vote as to how much of it they're going to accept. Well, if they'll accept it at all, and that's a huge issue because the implications are quite serious for so many sectors that I guess affect us all, whether or not it be about copyright or intellectual property rights when it comes to pharmaceutical companies and their abilities to override a government's internal decisions. And their ability to advertise their products to populations across given area in the participating countries. And so there are many aspects of this, and I'm in no way, shape, or form any authority on it, but I've tried to read up on the sections of it that I thought were most important or interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those things that are happening. There are other things that I suppose are considered good things. I understand that there was a pipeline deal that was supposed to go forward with Obama that he actually changed his direction on, which I think a lot of progressives considered a major victory, and the oil pipeline. And I think that's something that's a positive thing.
Yeah, I did hear about that as well. I think that that's a very positive thing. It's rare to see something like that happen. So I was really glad to see that, too.
Yeah. And so those are a couple of the things. It's a wild, wild world.
Mm-hmm.
It's all I can really say. There are so many other elements of international affairs that continue in its sort of gory kind of way that I find far more distressing than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that we can kind of start this note off maybe on a positive note rather than the negative. Those are some of the things that are happening.
Yeah.
And I know that there are many people across the world who are concerned and have expressed their concerns about this Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. And there have been several demonstrations in countries in Europe and so forth that of people who have, I guess, the same concerns as many people may have here.
Yeah.
And have voiced them.
Well, it seems to me that a lot of countries around the globe have more, I won't say have more rights, but at least their governments are more in sync with what their people need and the truth of what's going on with a lot of these things. So there have been a significant number of countries that have banned GMO crops and are, burning Monsanto crops and refusing to force this stuff on their people. And I think that's why they're trying to come up with these, what would you call it? You know, all of these laws to control, because more and more countries are saying no to these. You know, sort of corporate hogs is how I kind of look at them. And so so they're trying to create laws to force people into these relationships. I was looking at a story about Hungary. They're destroying all their Monsanto crops, the cornfields.
Mm-hmm.
And they just set them on fire, set them up to burn. And so there's a lot of European countries, there's a lot of Central and South American countries that are turning back the clock on this control of foods. So hopefully here in the United States, people will begin to recognize that this is important. And it really depends on American people, United States people, standing up and demanding these things. There's always a protest on a limited scale, but the way to protest really is with our dollars and stop buying these products. I mean, if we can't distinguish which corn product is a GMO product, then maybe we should stop using corn. Maybe we should stop using soy, you know, and stop spending money on things and let that be the parameter of where we should go with this. I was talking to one of my colleagues here at the radio station, actually a volunteer who's very much involved in justice throughout the globe, but particularly with regard to the way people are treated in this country. And so there's an economic boycott afoot and asking people to not shop. Do not shop the holiday season from Black Friday, which is November 27th, through New Year's, January 1st. No shopping in stores, no shopping online. And it says, buy black before the blackout. So it's it says we must redistribute the pain. If they don't feel pain, there is no way they are going to change. And so this is really about the way there's so little justice for people of color, black people in this city and really across the globe. But the police are really out of control, and they're I think a lot of white communities are also experiencing the injustice and the violence that has gone rampant through the police force. So it says, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his last public message before he was assassinated, talked about redistributing the pain through economic withdrawal. Mm-hmm. If those who caused the hurt are made to feel some of the pain, then perhaps, just maybe, there can be fair treatment. And power concedes nothing except by a demand, and that was by Frederick Douglass. Mm-hmm. I just really like their work, so I'm just going to share it with people. Mm-hmm. The demand. We want justice for blacks in America who have given America 460 years of sweat and blood to make her rich and powerful. We want an immediate end to police brutality and mob attacks. We want justice for the Native American Indians. We want justice for the Mexican and Latinos. We want justice for women. We want justice for the poor. We want justice for the incarcerated. We want justice for veterans. The or else economic boycott begins on Black Thursday. So I really support this, and I think that people should support this, because the only way, I would add to these demands, justice for our planet, Gaia. No shopping at malls or with major fast food eateries, retailers, chain stores, and gas stations. Shop at local or online small and black-owned businesses. So, so it's interesting that this is being put out there. And I'm looking for a website that people can go to find out more about this. But it's a basic principle that everybody can follow.
Mm.
So, yeah, I hope that people will begin to do this. I think it's the only way.
Certainly to act with, to speak with your dollars.
Yeah, that's definitely. JusticeOrElse.com, JusticeOrElse.com. I have to put on a piece of music because apparently there's no one here.
Oh.
And there's someone binging at the door. Well, I'm here, but I have to go answer the door.
Okay.
So I'm going to play a piece of music. Okay.
All right.
Sham ti san ti so la san lam shalom alehem. Peace be unto you. La pace. Pace, peace be unto you. The
It sort of has this living room feel to it, where you sort of get up and get the front door and come back.
Well, you know, we're kind of living on the frontier in this environment. It's a beautiful space, I have to say. I love it.
It is nice.
And we have this, you know, the building itself, it has a history of activism and community involvement, the Commons in Brooklyn. And so it's a nice community kind of space, but it does have its technological limitations at this moment as we grow into this space. And I guess things have to be built up, and there are all kinds of noises going, you know, open, closing doors, people in hallways, knocking, scratching. But it, you know, you're right. It's like being in the living room, and you're like, your noisy neighbors are making noise, and you're saying, quiet down, quiet down. So that's kind of what it's like to broadcast here. But it's, you know, it can be fun at the same time as it's a little bit of the frontier, as it is, as it were. I think most college radios probably have more facility than we have here, but here we have space. When we were up at City College, there was no space. There was no space to meet. There was no space to sit. There was no place to really to work. It was just a studio. You go in, you go out. So it feels more like we're gelling into a radio family community here in Brooklyn at Atlantic Avenue. So I'm enjoying it personally.
And whenever I'm there, I'm enjoying it too.
Exactly. It's really nice. I saw an interesting article. We were talking about the news. Hemp plant, which many people know as the plant that provides marijuana, but the plant itself has a lot of really powerful uses. And a new one that was just found is that it eats radiation and drive away toxicity. So if we plant hemp fields around places such as Fukushima and other areas where there has been contamination, the plants will actually eat the contamination.
I don't know if I completely I don't know if I completely
believe that.
No, I don't. Not about the radiation, no. The radiation has shelf life of hundreds of years in some cases. I don't know if I'd completely take that at face value.
Really?
I'm skeptical. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not. I think it's as good an idea as any. It's not like anybody's doing anything about it. Let's see. Phytoremediation, they're calling it, is the process whereby green plants remove toxins from the soil. So it's not taking it out of the air, it's taking it out of the soil. Plants can extract specific elements within their ecosystems and still thrive. They accumulate the toxins in their tissues and root systems, but remain undamaged. Sunflowers have been known to do something similar for centuries, eliminating heavy metals and pesticides from damaged soil. So that's what they're saying.
But then what do you do with the
plant? Two members of the mustard family are also useful for this process.
But what do you do with the plant?
You let it stay there. Don't eat it, I suppose. Don't eat it. Don't smoke the leaves.
Yeah.
Let it be there.
Okay.
I don't know. I find it interesting.
It is interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm not much of a skeptic, which is good, you know, to have your balance, because I'm like, oh, did you know? I'll say, wow. Well, here's another story that I find very fascinating and gave a big hooray to this story. Monsanto crops are decimated by pests while nearby non-GMO crops crops thrive. That's a really cool story.
It is.
Monsanto and the biotech industry are relentless in their efforts to push GM, genetically modified crops, on the world under false pretenses that their products increase yields and reduce the use of chemicals. These claims are not supported by the facts. And so it says the biotech industry has gained control of the U.S. soybean, corn, and cotton market by infiltrating regulatory agencies, using their patents on life to drive non-GMO farmers out of business. So that's an old story. But here it says that over the years, white flies have regularly attacked cotton plants only to be controlled by intensive spraying of chemical pesticides. But this year, despite a new pesticide being introduced and subsidized by the state government, the white fly attack spun out of control. And so so what's happening is that they are eating up the GMO crops, which is really interesting. Curiously, the crop, it says, as a result of the white flies decimating, this is in Punjab, it's in India, GM cotton crops this year, at least 15 farmers committed suicide. That's crazy. And yes, it was Monsanto crops that were decimated.
Yeah.
Curiously, the crop in the adjoining field and another in the vicinity showed far less white fly infestation. And because they had sprayed no chemical pesticides at all. He had used biofertilizers and other non-chemical formulations. So apparently, these fly, you know, what's happening really is that a lot of these companies are not paying attention to the fact that that insects mutate, like bacterias mutate.
Sure.
Like, you know, they give you the measles vaccine, and so the measles mutates. Mm-hmm. That's why there are so many variations. And so apparently insects are mutating so that they can
survive
the pesticide and, in fact, eat it up. Mm-hmm. And the crops that are not heavily pesticided are being left alone. In That's a way, it kind of feels like Mother Nature saying, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
We got you. I thought that was kind of an interesting
Definitely.
Story as well.
Definitely.
So well, I'll look into that to that story about hemp, because I've actually read quite a lot about using plants to clean environments. They're using plants to clean rivers and lakes, mm-hmm. and they're using plants to clean all kinds of toxins out of the environment. And you're right, I suppose. You have to think about what then happens to the plants.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of what I understand, a lot of this radioactive product, I guess you would say, that ends up being in the soil, as in like in Fukushima, is water soluble. So as you have rain or floods, it basically sinks further into the soil. And the question is, you know, how efficient then is a plant's root system at extracting, you know, this material that that emits radiation for, you know, many, many years to come. But, you know, how likely is it that the root system will remove all of it from the, you know, soil that it's in, or it, with just a certain amount, or what?
Those are interesting questions to be looked into, but I think that because we have a world that's so damaged by these toxins, that finding and exploring natural ways of detoxifying the soil is got to be a positive. So if the plant, it can pull out 50%, it's still better than leaving it there. from my perspective, because once it goes into the soil, it goes into the ground system,
sure.
It goes into the underground water system, and it becomes more and more toxic. So I just think that it's good to know that there are natural ways to do things, just like the farmers who had natural pesticide or natural controls had less problems with insect infestation.
Sure.
So if we begin to really look and explore all this, then we can think about, okay, granted it might take 100,000 years to clean all the toxins on the earth. So my point is we might as well start now.
Okay.
As opposed to
let's go.
Wait.
Yeah, okay. Point taken.
Yeah, so I just think that it's, you know, the fact that it may not be 100% is not for me reason to not explore what's possible. And of course, we have to, the other side of the coin is that we have to end nuclear power and all these energies and businesses and industries that are life-threatening to the planet and to the human race. I mean, one would think it's a no-brainer, you know, but apparently it's not. So,
well, there's a lot of money in the nuclear industry, and it's beyond simply it's beyond just creating electricity. It's beyond civilian use. So a lot of that technology is used for other things, you know, military use. There's stuff that where there are rockets that go into the air that, you know, are maybe powered by plutonium.
Absolutely.
All of that's part of the equation.
I agree. And that's how we got to where we are. However.
Yes.
It's time for it to end. So, you know, I really do get that. And it's, I mean, it's why we're still using oil when we don't have to be, you know, to power and to fuel. There are cleaner methods of fueling our society than the ones we're using. And we're using what we're using because of the money and the power that's being gained from it. But when we look at the cost in terms of war and destruction on the world, it's not worth it. So, you know, so I'm just looking at, you know, in the context of where we were starting with, mm-hmm. It's time, you know, because we can't depend on the ones who are getting fat off of these industries to make a change. It's us little guys that are going to have to make the change.
Hmm.
We have to take the responsibility to make this change. It's the only way. I can't see any other way. Hmm. So, you know, that said, I don't know all the mechanisms to do that. But, you know, maybe we need to ride bicycles and not ride cars.
That's a great idea.
You know, there's got to be, if enough people are doing the things that need to be done, then a change can occur. If
sure.
enough people are buying locally from the local farmers, the local producers, then there'll be no need to truck things from across the country. You know, there's a lot that people can do to make a difference.
I agree.
And I just think that we have to consider those things and begin doing them if we're not already.
I agree, and I strongly believe in the phrase. I think I heard it. I'm sure the peaceniks didn't originate this. I think it was Gandhi who said, "Be the change you want to see."
Yeah, exactly.
I definitely believe that.
Yeah, it's true. And I think part of the truth is also is that people are engaging in these projects to try to make a difference. So mm-hmm. for me, you know, to see scientists who are studying how to remove toxins from the earth, to see people who are pulling together and doing things because they have responsible and ethical leadership. There's a mm-hmm. story about Iceland. You know, because Iceland has, when they had their economic collapse in 2008, they threw the bankers out. Now they're all going to jail.
Right.
So, and now I saw a story where they're, as the banks are being, liquidated or and reformed,
mm-hmm.
all the money is being divided between all the Icelanders. So all of the corruption of the banks is being returned to the people. And that could only, I mean, Iceland is a small, isolated nation, small population, kind of a homogeneous population, mm-hmm. might make it easier. But, you know, it takes a certain amount of responsibility on the part of leadership as well as the people to get things done. And so here in the United States, what our elections look like are a circus.
I know. I have to say, I've really tuned out from them.
Yeah.
And I know I should be listening carefully, but
can't it's just stand
something,
it. Just yeah, can't stand it.
It just seems as if it's just one big show and no one can really be taken that seriously. But I realize that it dawns on me that the reality is that someone is going to be elected president. And therefore, it probably behooves me to pay a lot closer attention to what's going on. It's just that on the surface, it just really seems like
the tragedy is it's not just the surface; it's pretty shallow all the way through. That's the real tragedy.
Yeah.
But this is what happens, and then but it's only in the. I mean, I feel somewhat. I don't know the word chagrin that United States, the population is so uneducated about, first of all, what's happening in the world, but also about what's happening in front of their faces. When I see the kind of madness that passes for debates and passes for a public discourse, I mean, it's totally insane. I mean, there really is no one to vote for. It never has been. Hopefully someday there will be. Or there may be this time around. I mean, there are candidates that I do like. A candidate, at the very least. So,
I think that part of the issue is that what you see is completely choreographed, and it's choreographed by, you know, private organizations that whose job it is to do the public relations and, you know, to spread the hype, and that's what they do for their money, and it's about the image and that's what they're hired to manufacture and engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how, I mean, I'm going to be optimistic and assume that there are more people that are aware of, you know, that may think like us in terms of there being just this sort of dog and this show on television,
mm-hmm.
That's there to titillate you, but not really to offer any substance or anything that's truly thought provoking, that you can really latch onto in terms of understanding governance and the seriousness of being the head of state.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it as just private industries being involved or in charge of event planning, and what you see on television is the product, and
yeah.
You know that's all it is. And you're hearing like the, you know, the latest silly thing that somebody says, and the question is, well, then how, as you say, how can you take any one of these characters that seriously? So it's not a good place to be right now, I think, in terms of the politics. It just, I guess, in my most cynical sense, it just feels like it's kind of a bit of a joke being played on the public. Because I mean, there may be one person, or maybe more than one person who seems to really appeal to the intelligence of an audience, but by and large, the others don't.
Yeah, well, I think there are many, many people who are caught up in the media madness, but it's not something that happened overnight. It's been a gradual mind control project, especially here in the U.S. I mean, I think there was an attempt to do this, and there is some success doing it globally in terms of controlling the mind of people through the media. But I think Americans are in the worst shape and have less capacity for discernment. Of course, that's not necessarily the listener base of WBAI, or necessarily, I don't know how it might be distributed, but obviously somebody is going to the polls and voting, based on the choices that we have. Mm. And so, yeah, it's just a kind of madness. And I know many people, I can't say I know them well, but I've talked to a lot of people over the years, and there are lots of people who are seriously buying into the politics of fear and mayhem and want to support these parties that are about austerity and making it difficult for the people who are poor, making it difficult for immigrants, making it difficult. You know, there's a lot of people who have bought into these politics and really do support the kind of meanness that we see in politics. So there's a lot of people supporting that. And it's kind of a tragedy, because from my perspective, what people don't realize is how much this is growing. It's sort of like being in quicksand. And, you're looking and you're seeing people sink, and you're laughing and say, well, I'm not going to help them. But you don't realize that you're also standing in quicksand. Mm-hmm. And so, people who supported this attitude, I think political attitude of meanness, have found themselves to be on the wrong side of that when things start to happen, when the banking systems begin to fail, when the housing bubble began to burst, when all of these so-called supports and props of the middle class began to dissolve, many, many more people became moved to the other side of the poverty line. And once they were on that other side, there's still nobody to help them. It's like that old saying, when they came for me, there was nobody left to speak up. And I think Americans suffer from that kind of syndrome where everyone's so frightened and they want to hold on to whatever they have and not be generous, but they don't recognize that they're holding on to an empty sack. And there's, so I think that's really how these politicians get over. They get over by convincing people that the only way that they're going to survive is to selfishly cling to what they have and to deny to others what they need.
Yes, and I excuse me. And I also agree with you, and I believe as well that it ends up being kind of a performance to get people to concentrate or to turn away from the politicians themselves. I mean, if they can get you thinking about other things rather than about them.
Well, yeah, the whole idea is to not allow that.
Yeah.
This is
it
true.
They're part of what many of them do is they will say things that are, I'm assuming, intentionally not thought-provoking, but emotionally charged, saying something so that they know you will, a public will react strongly to. So while the public is reacting and, either rising in disgust or what have you, they're not paying attention to the person who just made the statement. And so it just seems as if it's like a lot of sort of balls that they're lobbing at people, and they're, you know, they catch one, and you know, everyone's sitting there saying like, oh, look at what this person's just said, but you're not actually looking at the messenger or what's behind their even making such a statement. Mm-hmm. I think so much of it is done for the effect, and the effect is designed to distract the public from actually concentrating on who the person is behind all of the window dressing. So it becomes kind of a game. And at the end of the day, it seems as if the objective then in terms of media is to see how effective that game was played through your opinion.
So yeah.
You could have been completely misinformed, but they want to know how effective they were in affecting your opinion, and that's all it is.
Yeah, it's a manipulation of the mind.
Yes, it is.
It's an entire manipulation of the mind and manipulation of on so many levels.
Yes, it is.
And you know, it's really interesting because I look at all of these manipulations and you know, all that's being done to harm our world and to harm humanity, really. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at it from my perspective, I find that spirituality, which is the thing that I like to focus on, is a very powerful tool to liberation. And I'm really seeing it more and more as a path to liberation, even more than from the traditional spiritual ways of thinking in terms of divinity. I mean, I think spirituality certainly is a claiming of one's divinity and sovereignty, but it's also a path to liberation, to liberate one's mind and heart from the madness that is been dominating the world for the last 300,000 years at the very least. So
yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think people have to liberate on themselves individually from mind control and not religiosity, but the spiritual power is the only method I can see that really works.
I completely agree with you. I think that's the only way that human beings can really be unified.
Yeah.
And it is by that that sense of depth and of peacefulness and sort of inner serenity and connection, communion in a real sense of the word.
Yeah, in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, I don't see any other way out. And a number of years ago I had a spiritual support group, and you know, now that we have a space here, maybe I'll think about rekindling it. But one of the members of the spiritual support group spoke about this whole philosophy, and I can't claim credit for it, but it was the only way out is to go into one yourself. There's no other way out of this system of mind control except to go to the deepest part of oneself to connect to your true power. And in that way, you can step to the side and not be dominated by what's going on around us in the world. So, and as people do this, they will be dropping out of the mind control matrix, which is basically what this is all about. And from a level of a certain perspective, it's the mind control matrix is also about spirituality, but from the reverse side of disempowerment. So from my perspective, a lot of the energies, the entities, the beings that are, that have put this system into place, did so with the express intention of mining not so much just the planet, but humanity itself. Because human beings are very powerful, have very powerful creative energies. And we, if you you could see what's on the planet, everything that's been created was came from a human being. I mean, anything that's not from nature. So we have the power and the capacity to create almost anything. But we have been sort of mind swiped and been reprogrammed to be almost like robots on the planet. And so everything from the planet, everything from humanity is being exploited and extracted. So I think that a lot of what people see in politics is part of a, what I would call an ancient spiritual war. And a lot of it came about, well, it escalated with the whole situation with the Catholic Church and the early formation of the church, what was it, like 300 AD or so, and their collusion with the monarchs of Europe to exploit the resources of the world. And part of that exploitation was the dictate from the church through the papal bulls and the Holy See that declared that unless one was a Christian, that then these people of the earth were not really human and that they could be exploited. So there was this whole effort to dominate the earth and dominate the peoples of the earth through the use of so-called religion or religiosity, spirituality. And so I feel that we're still living under that creation. All of our laws, all of the attitudes, and people have been systematically programmed according to these precepts that were created and inserted into the consciousness of the planet. And it all has to do with accumulated wealth, exploitation, and it's more of a spiritual war, I say, because it's not just the enslavement of people or the subjugation of people, it's the taking of people's divine power. It's about stealing a person's capacity to connect with their soul. And so it's a very deep process that's been happening on the planet, and the insidious nature of it is such that to fight it is to become it. So people who get out there and get mad and fight and shoot back, they get warped into it because they become the thing that they hate. So it's a very insidious thing. It's hard to overcome. But I think certain of our spiritual leaders had the key, like Gandhi, like Martin Luther King Jr., where you have to approach it from a really divine place and reclaim the true power of human beings, which is really to be creator gods in the physical form. That's really what a human being is. And so we've been totally robbed of that state through these generations of conditioning and programming and exploitation. And so to me, the only way out of that tangle, that knot, is to go into oneself and rediscover the true power that we have as beings and then embody that in the world. And as each one does that, power will be reclaimed. And I believe that this has been happening, I mean, at least since for the last 30 years, 50 years, since the 50s probably, it's been a slow, gradual climb where things are changing and people are turning away from this system. And that's why they keep coming with these more draconian laws deeper laws, because more and more people are waking up, so they're finding they have to put stronger and stronger controls. So from my perspective, spirituality is really the only way to re-empower humanity by allowing us to connect to the source, which is alive in each and every one of us. So part of the distraction and the politics and the media and, you know, the control in the education system and the violence, all of that is to keep our attention out into that distraction and to not come to know the truth of who we are on the inside. So to me, it's all a spiritual war. It's not just about economics. It's about ownership, not of body, but of soul.
I agree with you. And I think that I agree, especially about the point that there are, I think, the people who are nervous and therefore double down on, I guess I refer to it as social engineering.
Yeah.
To sort of engineer your reactions to what they do or what they tell you they're doing. This extra effort, I think, I agree with you, comes from the fact that they see that a lot of people are gaining access to more information, being able to think for themselves. And because of that, their opinions need to be controlled even more.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that that's probably why we're seeing, you know, this sort of brick come down. Maybe it's not sort of a brick coming down on everyone's head in terms of these agreements that are coming up, you know, between countries that have all of this weight within each country. I think it's in reaction to that sort of intellectual, spiritual kind of enlightenment that has been going on in the world and that frightens a few people that have a lot of money.
Yeah, money and power and control, yeah. And they seem to never have enough.
I don't mean to imply that people who have money are necessarily one way or the other. That's not what I'm saying. But in terms of controlling public opinion, where you're consuming something directly affects their investment in an industry, so they want to continue to consume it. That's where I think that this sort of fright on their part is coming from, where people are starting to truly question what they've been engineered into thinking. And so therefore they have to sort of show their teeth.
Exactly. But I think as these systems escalate, as these kind, you know, like the, what is it, the TPP or TTP? I keep forgetting.
Trans-Pacific.
Trans-Pacific, right. But really, I think one of the strategies that we have to, we don't have to, but that I have found most useful is this strategy of retreating from the noise. So I was not really kidding when I was saying that I don't, you know, watch the media, I don't watch television. And it's not that I'm not aware of what's going on. I have an awareness of what's going on, but it's like the insidious programming that takes place is really damaging to us mentally, spiritually, and psychologically. And the constant negativity of the media and the papers and the constant fear-mongering has a toll. And it's also exploitation of us economically. And I think it's time to just make choices to retreat from being from that saturation. And so that, to me, that's part of the spiritual journey is to just retreat from that saturation and to really begin to connect to that inner fullness, that inner spaciousness, the true power that can guide our lives in ways that are significant. And, you know, people talk about connecting with intuition and what a difference it makes, but intuition is really just a shadow of what's possible when we truly connect to the divine essence within us, because this is where we can be guided to really make decisions that are going to have a dramatic impact on our lives, on the world, to make change. And I think this is where we are headed. People are making choices to just go the other way. And I suspect that all of this shouting about what's going on television and all of these fearful treaties are not going to work because people are not willing anymore to participate. And that's really what it's going to take for people to be willing to do whatever it needs to be done to not participate. When I say do whatever needs to be done, I don't mean go to war. I mean go to your local market. I mean, you know, farmer's market, go to your local farmer's market as opposed to the supermarkets. You know, making these choices on an individual basis is what's going to make the difference. And I know, I understand people say if you don't vote, then, you know, the bad one will win. But I've kind of had enough of voting for, you know, the best of the worst. I don't believe that that's a true answer. So, you know, I don't really know that we shouldn't be paying more attention to local elections, and we shouldn't be actually running locally in our communities. I think everything has to become more local. We have to be able to trust the people who are in the structures that are close to home. And as we begin to build that structure of trust at a local level, then there can be more trust built at a state level, and then there could be more trust built, you know, going further up the ladder. But this whole business of, you know, Congress people spending their whole careers in Congress, people that are 80, 90 years old, and not doing anything but catering to the corporate oligarchy. So I think we just have to, you know, it may not be something that's going to happen this election. It may not be something that's going to change overnight. But if we really begin to look around us, our personal decisions, making sure that whomever we vote for, we know who they are. We look at their records. I'm not interested in what somebody says in a debate. I want to know what their record has been for the past 10 years. You know what I mean? Exactly. It's like that's the kind of thing that's going to make change, is when we each as individuals reclaim our sovereignty and decide what we will and will not stand for, and just let the things at the top collapse of their own weight, and let's start begin to build communities that work on a grassroots level. Communities that can support each other economically, spiritually. And we can do that by supporting each other's efforts. You know, I might have a small effort. You might have a small effort. There might be a non-profit in the neighborhood that's trying to do work in the community. You know, there's so much we can do on the micro level, the small scale, and create real wisdom communities, create real resource building. And if we can get some buy-in on the local level from the small businesses, then they can begin to thrive again instead of being, you know, churned around. Every time I turn around, a business is gone and something new is there, and it lasts a couple of months and that's gone. So it's really in everybody's interest, even the small business, the community business owners, to think about how to build a real local economic base. To me, that's the only answer. And to build, you know, churches that are not exploiting people. You know, the churches used to help people. Now I see them becoming real estate moguls, just like anything else. So people need to stop supporting those churches and build their own spiritual community. So to me, that's the only answer. I can't think of any other way to go. And like I said, it might take 100,000 years. That's okay. Because, you know, the indigenous people say that we need to think 7 generations down the line. And if we start thinking generations down the line, then we can begin to create institutions in which young people can come through it and get a real education and come to understand and respect themselves as sovereign human beings. And then we can start getting earlier generations involved in this process if we can unplug people from the system. So it's kind of a dream, but I don't see any other way. Because also, you know, to pull the money out, the economic boycotts, pull the money out of the system, pull your money out of, you know, the big banks. I saw an article from the banking system. I forget which country it was, but it's happening in this country where they're trying to take away actual money and force people into the economic banking system, so that if you go into a lot of banks, you'll see that they've installed all these new machines where you can go and do your banking, and then you'll see maybe one or two tellers in very long lines. So they're trying to discourage people from actually exchanging money, taking money out, taking money in, and they want everybody to have a sort of a digital monetary system, which means you don't really have any money. It's just changing the accounts and, you know, the numbers in the accounts. So, and the objective, one of their long-term objectives is to totally eliminate cash. So it gives them absolute control. So, you know, so if you're only expressing your finances digitally and you're not in control of that, really, the banking, you know, your resources can be manipulated at even a greater level. And what they're doing is they're in this, I forget the country, I'm looking for it now, but they've created a situation where you can't do any exchange through a teller or through cash unless it's huge amounts of money. So people with small exchanges, regular paychecks, will have no more access to a human banking system. So, you know, so they're like planning all these little things of controlling people, and we just need to pull our money out. How many millions of people have their money in these banks? Pull it out. Create other institutions to invest in, or look for institutions that are, I mean, there's precious few, but there are institutions where you can take your money, and it will be safer than in some of the bigger banks that are just exploiting. I mean, charging $8 to cash a check, charging $38 if you are, you know, bouncing a check or something. So there's like these huge systems that are just raking money from the poor into their systems. And we need to step away from it.
Well, all I can say, for my part, is I'm really fond of the credit union system.
Yeah, I mean that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
And we need to start thinking about building systems like this, even economically. You know, I live in a building, a fairly decent building. It's old and need of repair, but it's a fairly decent building in a gentrified neighborhood. So I wouldn't be able to live there if I didn't have a rent-stabilized apartment. And so, but there needs to be some kind of brakes put on the sort of this constant escalation of living spaces. People paying highly exorbitant fees, rents for their apartments. You know, there's just got to be another way. And obviously, it's going to take some people of every so-called economic class to be part of this conversation. Because if landlords are not willing to engage in the conversation, then, you know, it's going to be difficult. but people need to think about where they're putting their money. So if you have an apartment building in which there are 20 apartments, and each of those tenants are paying $2,000 a month, $3,000 a month, whatever it is these days, maybe those tenants can think about buying a building for themselves. You know what I mean? It's like we just have to start thinking differently. Put the money together and buy property. It's like if we begin to interact with each other as a real community, I mean, it may not happen quickly, but maybe those people who have like mind and are at a level of awareness that they're willing to do this, it can begin. I'm sure that it's happening in places, but it needs to grow. I guess that's my rant.
Well, it's truly grassroots thinking.
Yeah, it's like we have to look at it on all levels. And to me, this is what spirituality is. Spirituality is a very powerful, real-world perspective. But it's one that encompasses compassion and love and fairness and justice. You know, all the things that people talk about here at WBAI, but from my perspective, it's not about fighting for it. It's about loving for it. Action through love and compassion can create change.
What a concept.
Yeah, well, hey, I don't see any other way. And truly, the other part of that is that spiritual knowledge is very powerful. And it gives you a real edge, a real advantage in terms of making choices, making decisions, wanting to know which way to turn. When you begin to expand your awareness to the spiritual realm, and you recognize that you have guides all around you, that you have a direct communication to the first source. You know, it's like everything in existence is created out of the body of the creator, the first creator. So the substance of everything is part of that divine creation. So when you elevate to the level of consciousness within that substance, that opens the path to that, like having a phone to the top guy or gal, however you look at it, guy, gal. And so you can get really deep insights on who you can trust, who you can't trust, on where to go, you know, opportunities, that kismet, that synchronicity that will put you in the right place at the right time for the right opportunity. That's part of what arises out of spiritual power. And so it's a very valuable thing for people to pursue, I think, and within themselves. Because it can only be pursued, first of all, within yourself, and then in community. Because it's not about having a guru, and it's not about having a priest or preacher or leader or of any religious denomination. It's about claiming one's own sovereign divinity. Anyway, but that's what I'm about. That's part of what my mission is really about. It's about finding ways to make this the truth on this planet. So I'm always open to collaboration. For those of you who want to collaborate on these ideas, please send an email to heartofmindradio@gmail.com. heartofmindradio@gmail.com, as well as those of you who need to have announcements made or doing events around town. If you have something for me to announce, it's best to send it by email. I don't always have access to phone. I came in today and found I had a whole stack of phone messages because my phone is actually on the computer. Didn't have time to get to all those messages. So email is so much more accessible for me. For those people who want to make contact, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And if they want to contact you, Paulette, how do they do that?
They can send an email to me at thenightreport@gmail.com.
Excellent. So we're accessible. I also have a great, I'm learning to really enjoy Facebook. Are you on Facebook?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I guess that's where I couldn't find you. But, you know, I have, you know, I'm working in the world now, self-directed and self-supported. And I do Qigong classes, which is a moving meditation class. And I do have a private practice. I consider myself to be a spiritual doula. And I help people through that inner transformative process that is natural to each human being. I don't heal people. I'm a conduit for healing energies to pass through me. But I do this work. And people can find me on Facebook. My name is Katharine, Kathryn Davis, Davis. So you could search me out on Facebook. It's a common name, so you might find several Katharine Davises there. So if you want a link, please email me at heartofmindradio@gmail.com. If you want to learn more about meditation and healing, go to qigongonline.net, QIGONGONLINE.net. And that way you can connect. So I'm actually going to check my email. I have my computer right here. And to see if anyone has sent me announcements. It's just that when you're on a radio, you can't check for announcements.
Yeah.
You can only check for email. You can't read messages, so you can't listen to them, such as it is. Well, Sunday, November 15th, from 4 to 7 p.m., join Barry Gruber, Suzanne, celebrating 31 years of co-creating Universal Peace Day. I don't know if this is a private thing or not. But anyway, it's at... I won't give out the information because it's too private, but can go to suzencreations.com, SUZENCREATIONS, suzencreations.com. And there's also an interesting, were you going to say something?
Yes, but it's not an open event, but tomorrow I'm going to be delivering a lecture at Fordham University.
Oh, nice. What's that about?
Well, it's going to be a lecture on that has to do with public health and maternal health, specifically maternal mortality, which is women who have problems that are sometimes fatal when they're attempting to give birth. And I'm going to be discussing the economic, social, and political aspects of maternal mortality and compare work that I've done, research areas that I've done, that I've worked in here in the Bronx, and compare that to work that I did academic work that I did in West Africa and Liberia.
Wow.
So we're going to look at what some of the comparisons and the contrasts are regarding the factors that affect a woman's ability to survive an emergency situation when she has to give birth immediately.
Well, that sounds amazing. If you can, please do record your talk.
I will do that.
Because it would be nice to share it here, edit it down to its essentials. Because that's kind of, I would say, that's pretty vital information for a lot of people. So I do hope that you're able to do a recording of at least your piece of it.
Yeah.
And so we can make it more widely available.
Okay, will do.
Cool. Yes, and so that's a wonderful opportunity for people to hear more at the Fordham University. Mm-hmm. There's an event coming up on Saturday, November 14th, another event. It's The Return of Max, the Ancient Crystal Skull. I'm actually planning to go to this event. It's, crystals hold information, and crystal skulls are said to be holding, giving specific information to. It's like you can touch them and receive messages from them. So it should be interesting. It's with Jody Sirota, and it is at Pearl Studios, 519 8th Avenue, between 35th and 36th Street, on the third floor, Saturday, November 14th, 7 to 10 p.m. There is a door cost, so you might want to call 212-736-0999. 212-736-0999. And also, I want to let people know that I have started teaching Qigong in Brooklyn. It's, if you're in the neighborhood, it may be worthwhile. At a place called Studio Maya. And it's Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m. So it's an early morning, midweek refresher class that will keep you balanced throughout the week. And Studio Maya is 603 Bergen Street in Brooklyn. And you would need to register through the studio. It's a beautiful open space there. And they have a number of different kinds of classes and healing modalities. And you can go to their website, studiomayanyc.com, studiomayanyc.com, studiomayanyc.com. Their phone number is 917-837-3705. So that's Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m., and it's nice because it's very close to where I live, and it's a beautiful space. I'm very happy about it, which was a very synchronistic thing that I found this space, that I had this opportunity. As I was talking earlier, you know, you follow your instincts, follow your guidance.
Certainly.
And,
It's never wrong.
It's never wrong, but sometimes it's curious because you don't know what's going on till it happens. But, you know, over the summer, I was very often going out selling books, creating a little bookshop near my house on the corner, because I have thousands of books, literally, and not much money. So I figured it was a win-win. And so I went out and I was doing this thing, and not very successfully, and I kind of petered out. I was like, ah, lug all this stuff out there, sell three books. Is it really worth it? And so one morning I got this guidance, you know, why not? Do you want to go out and sell your books today? It's always a question. And I was like, nah, I don't know. Don't you want to go out and sell your books today? You know, so I figured, get it once, get it twice. All right, I packed up all my stuff, went outside, and I set up a cute little thing in front of Starbucks. And since Starbucks has Wi-Fi, I brought my computer. So I was playing with my computer and not selling many books in front of Starbucks. And then I also got the notion to put up signs about my Qigong classes and my healing work. And so I put all this up. People were curious. Nobody bought anything until this one person came by and said, oh, that's interesting. You do Qigong. We started talking. Ended up, this was the person who is the owner of the studio.
Wow. Wonderful.
And so it's a synchronicity that I could never have planned for myself. And so it was only through going through the process of following guidance and going out there and trusting that I was in the right place at the right time to meet a person who could help me find an opportunity to have this class. So it's just, that's kind of the synchronicity and the guidance and the connections that can be made when we connect into our deeper selves and trust the message that's given. It's a small thing. But for me, it was very magical and very powerful and very much needed. So that's what it is that we can connect to when we connect deeply within ourselves. So we're running out of time, but I want to let everyone know that I'm going to be doing, I'm not sure if it'll start December or January, a monthly event in the space here downstairs. It is the cafe downstairs. So it'll be a gathering for wellness, healing circles, guests, and sharing, you know, a bit of a support group kind of thing. So that'll be starting very soon. For people who are interested, again, please email me at heartofmineradio@gmail.com. And so as we make our transition to the next program, Jim Freund is standing by with Hour of the Wolf. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to leave people with, Paulette?
Well, I'd like to second what you've said. I think that it's very, very important to follow your inner guide. And it becomes a process of being comfortable with it and trusting in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're able to do that, you sort of develop a courage and a bravery to see what the universe is going to offer you.
Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy.
It's not easy at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I can identify with as you describe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain sort of literal self-confidence that you end up having or developing when you realize that you may not know what's coming your way, but you're going to have to find out.
Yeah, and it really fortifies you, it teaches you to walk through fear. It's like walking on hot coals, walking through fire. So there's a level of mastery that comes about as a result of making these kinds of choices.
Yes,
but it's very empowering and rewarding. So those are kind of things that we're going to be working on and helping each other to do through this new monthly gathering that we'll be having in support of the Heart of Mind radio show and each other and BAI. And it's going to be great. So I look forward to that. And I say thank you, Paulette, for joining and engaging today. Hopefully we'll be able to bring in the listeners soon in our conversations. I think we'll all enjoy that as well.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I believe today I played Earth by Michelle Indiocello. I think Peace Be Unto You is a piece I played. I'm not sure the singer. And I think as we make our transition, I'm going to go into Shape of My Heart. Is that Sting?
I think
it is Sting. Okay. So stay tuned. Coming up in a moment, Hour of the Wolf.
The cards as a meditation, and those he plays never suspect. He doesn't play for the money he wins. He doesn't play for respect. He deals the cards to find the answer, the sacred geometry of chance, the hidden law of a probable outcome, the numbers lead a dance. You know that the spades are the swords of a soldier. You know that the clubs are weapons of war. You know that diamonds money for this art, but that's not the shape of my heart. He may play the jack of diamonds, he may lay the queen of spades, he may conceal a king in his hand while a memory of it fades. Spades are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art, but that's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape.
think there's something wrong. I'm not a man, but too many faces. The mask I wear is one. For those who speak no nothing and find out to their cost, like those who curse their luck. Space are the swords of a soldier. I know that the clubs are weapons of war. I know that diamonds mean money for this art, but that's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape of my heart. That's not the shape. Shape of my
morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Well, it's time to play a little bit of catch up. It's before the news, but also yesterday I recorded an interview with Jesus. Thank you. And good morning. Well, it's been quite a while. It's actually been a month since I've been here. I was scheduled and planning to do an All Hallows Eve program, and I got ill. I had an ear infection, of all things, which I really must recommend to you. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. It hurts, and eventually, yeah, it went away, but sigh. Okay, so it's been 4 weeks. Yeah, 4 weeks since I've been on the air, 5 weeks since I've done a proper show, and we have a proper show for you this morning. Unfortunately, we've missed a number of movie openings that Dan Persons has done reviews for. We have two. He was going to have one this week, and he's had not-feeling-well issues this week, alas. So we have two for you, and I'm going to play them actually pretty much sequentially, one after the other. And why are they not showing up here? Do I have the order reversed? I'm still, as always, here we are. Yes, I have the order reversed. Always struggling with the technology here. But we heard The Martian during the thon, in fact, on the 15th, according to this. Okay, yeah, that figures. And this morning we will hear Crimson Peak and Crumbs. Crimson Peak you probably heard of. It's a film by Del Toro. Crumbs is, not a tentpole movie, not something that a studio is hoping to get all of their money from. And those are, frankly, a lot of the reviews that I like the most. I want to just throw in some quickies, since I don't do much media, but people know that I'm a bit of a Doctor Who fanatic, and have to say that this season of Doctor Who has been really good. And the episode that aired last Saturday with Peter Capaldi, he had what I think they would call his moment, like Chris Eccleston when in the first New Who series had his just this once everybody lives moment in the episode The Doctor Dances. They gave Peter Capaldi a brilliant anti-war speech. Coincidentally, just in time for Veterans Day. And that was his moment. May not be his last, but it was certainly one that said, okay, there is just no question that Peter Capaldi is a great Who. So, all that being... Oh, and the other thing. I saw the movie Tomorrowland. I've got a lot to say about it, and we don't have enough time. Dan did a review of that as well, which I somewhat agree with, but I liked it more than he did. And I do recommend it as it comes out onto various media that you can see at home. So, all that being said, let's get on to the two reviews and then an interview with John Joseph Adams. I'll do more of an intro at that time, but let's hear Dan's reviews.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. We're going to play 6 Degrees of Guillermo del Toro this time around, not just because his new film Crimson Peak came out a couple of weeks ago, but also because there are a few other notable releases that, just by coincidence, weirdly connect to him. As for Crimson Peak, del Toro's first attempt at telling an actual 19th century Gothic ghost story, although pretty much all his works have some element of Gothic to them, yes, even when there are giant robots clomping around, There's a sequence at the beginning of the film when Tom Hiddleston, playing the passionate, mysterious aristocrat Thomas Sharp, teaches Mia Wasikowska, playing American heiress Edith Cushing, that newfangled dance craze, the waltz. He places a lit candle in their clutched hands, informing her that if the dance is done properly, the flame will not go out. Similarly, Crimson Peak is intended to be a waltz between all forms of Gothic storytelling, romantic, horror, mystery, ghost, even a few lashings of science fiction. Problem is, Del Toro keeps blowing the flame out. I'm beginning to fear that from his brief dalliance with The Hobbit that Del Toro has fallen prey to Peter Jackson syndrome, a debilitating affliction in which a director's inner editor is compromised and he begins to believe that more is indeed more, that he has license to throw up on the screen whatever his little old heart desires. In short, Del Toro should have picked one subgenre and stuck to it, rather than trying to cram them all in. And it's the ghost story, which is meant to be the most prominent, that suffers from this. It's never fully reconciled with straight melodramatic elements. In particular, the designs that Baronet Sharp and his sister, played by Jessica Chastain, have on poor Ms. Cushing turn out to be disappointingly prosaic and predictable, and no amount of paranormal intervention is able to fix that. Del Toro wants Hitchcock and Daphne du Maurier and Shirley Jackson and Arthur Conan Doyle and Robert Wise and a whole bunch of striking imagery, both real, like a gray mansion wreathed in a ring of startlingly crimson earth and computer-generated, to frolic in this grand goth playground. His zeal, as always, is infectious, but Crimson Peak doesn't quite pay it off. But if you do love Del Toro's enthusiasm, and who doesn't, really, you should know that he brings the same passion to his role as narrator of The Pit and the Pendulum, one of the segments of the new computer-animated Edgar Allan Poe anthology, Extraordinary Tales, that's opening this Friday. This is a collection of 5 short films inspired by Poe's works, all interpreted and helmed by Spanish director Raul Garcia and narrated by an eclectic collection of talent, including Christopher Lee in his last role, Julian Sands, even Bela Lugosi and Roger Corman get in there. Garcia is nothing if not ambitious. His interpretations take impressionistic liberties with the source material to good effect, and each film has its own unique style, from the stop-motion puppets of The Fall of the House of Usher to the monochromatic graphics based on the art of Alberto Breccia of The Telltale Heart, to the painterly lushness of The Mask of the Red Death. In terms of quality, the truly impressive pieces are backloaded toward the latter half of the collection, where both